It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this fifth day of July 2023. This is the Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round. And where, if you show up right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Theo and Squeaky and Ralphs and Anatole, and not at all well moderated by me, because Roger's covered up this evening. And so y'all be on your best behavior, please, please. You always are. I'm playing. You know that. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you happen to be listening to the podcast, and thank you if you do, thank you sincerely. Thank you for being part of this amazing little community. If you would do us all a favor and like it, or subscribe to it, or love it, or press a heart button, or follow it, or however that particular podcasting platform describes things, gosh, it would be helpful. It's especially helpful if you'll leave a comment for the algorithm. Hello is nice. I mean, it's content neutral. The algorithm just likes to see people commenting. I don't understand, but I don't have to understand. It is the day after the 4th of July. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and, well, I guess we will do a little further eulogizing of our dear friend Scott Marinoff this evening. I continued to receive notes over the course of, well, from the moment I broke the news yesterday to today. Our buddy Ken in Northwest PA said, I don't know how you're going to be able to handle today's show, nor me for that matter. Peace and love. It is what it is, and I know that's, I'm not trying to be flippant, but Scott tuned in not because, well, he tuned in to hear about, you know, the news of the day and stuff that was on our minds. And so we'll be doing that. But we're going to take a little time and check in with a couple of moments of Scott. By the way, Ralph says, I'm offering a $50 challenge this evening for Scott. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you so much. You are and continue to be an absolute dear. And every program here at the Horn does begin with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so as a consequence, we say thank you to our fifth day of the month PayPal subscribers. And that means thank you so very much to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you, Kenda. And thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thanks as well to all of you who keep this program going, either at PayPal or Patreon or a la carte or through the U.S. Postal Service at 103, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And if you go to headon.live and you go to the contribute tab, you'll just go to headon.live. You'll see the address if you want to participate through the U.S. Postal Service. I had a note from one of those folks who has been listening to this program for pretty much as long as it's been around. That would be our dear friend Tom in sunny San Rafael. And let me call that up. Tom said, I just heard the devastating news about Scott. I missed the program yesterday and was listening to the podcast just now. I'd been worried, too, after not hearing from him for so long, and I will miss him terribly. Thank you, Tom. Thank you. Scott's been on my mind since last night and into all day long. Yeah, I guess you're hearing it brand new for the first time, Steve, in New York. Wait, what? Did I hear you right? Yeah, Scott's gone. And I think I speak for the entirety of the Horn Family Community Congregation when I say there's a terrible hole in our lives. And because there is. There just is. And again, thank you, Ralphs, for the challenge. If someone will come up with any combination that results in $50 in memory of Scott, well, Ralphs will double that, and that'll get our fundraising goal for the evening down to $600. Thank you, Ralphs, and thanks to anybody who wants to jump in. Lou asks, is it appropriate to ask cause of death? Sure, it is, but we don't know. All we know from the post that the family put up, or his niece, actually, put up, is that it was sudden. That's it. And her post was put up on June 13th, so I'm not exactly sure when Scott passed. But the post was from June 13th. And I've felt horrible since last night. That I didn't know beforehand. Before now, before yesterday. I wanted to share a couple of things because Scott was a prolific participant in various forms of media. And Kelly. Hi, Kelly. Kelly sent me a link. Apparently, Scott enjoyed answering questions on Quora. There are some dandies here. Quora is a forum where you can answer questions that people put forward. Lou, I don't know if there is an obituary. I suppose we can search. Scott lived alone and was mortally afraid, and I do not use that, of the pandemic and of Rona, because he was at elevated risk for an even more horrible death. And so he stayed in a lot. And I can only presume that he would. And again, I'm speculating here. People who talked to him on a regular basis didn't hear from him because Scott was prolific in reaching out and talking to other people. And so someone must have done a wellness check. And I presume that is when he was found. We last heard from him in the month of June. So that will tell us, that gives us because the family doesn't know. All they know is suddenly. They don't know cause, or they're not sharing cause, and if they're not sharing it, I don't feel comfortable digging around in it, because the end result is the same. But over on Quora, Scott, well, he had 57,500 views since 2019 of his content, his answers to question. He provided 140 answers at Quora. 9 months ago, someone asked, which channel does President Trump watch most often? And Scott said, Trump's TV viewing time. I'm reading this, but try to hear it in Scott's voice, because it was unique and it was broadcast quality. And yeah, Trump's TV viewing time is split pretty much evenly between Cartoon Network and Newsmax. How would you describe Trump starting from when he was born? To which Scott replied, Trump himself, along with his apologists and enablers, in and out of office, seemed to cast him in some sort of messianic light. Too bad a 20th century King Herod wasn't around in 1948 or 1946. He might have spared the rest of us from a huge, seemingly endless ass ache. What right does the FBI have to search Donald Trump's house? Scott answered, simple, really? The 300 classified documents were the property of the federal government. The Bureau's jurisdiction covers such crimes, and in the course of their investigation, they found probable cause to seek a valid warrant to conduct the search, so they did. Indictments will likely be handed down soon, then a trial, which most likely will be followed by convictions. This is Scott Marinoff Gold. What are Trump's negatives? Briefly, yet amazingly comprehensively, Trump is a delusional, demented, inept fool. And then, because he was a former member of media, should CNN be banned for lying about Trump? Scott replied, banned by whom exactly? The cable and satellite companies, the channel is part of their lineup and is supported by companies who place paid ads for viewers to see. There's nothing un-American or ban-worthy about that. Last time I checked, such arrangements were part of our free enterprise system, not to mention part of our long tradition of free speech expression. Customers who subscribe to the channel tier CNN is on choose freely to purchase access to that tier. Those who like CNN will choose to watch it, and those who won't, won't. It's the same with Fox News or One America Network. As with CNN, those channels are also made available to consumers. If some choose to watch them, that's fine. Some don't, which in effect is their personal banning of that content, a choice which is personal and right for them. This goes back 2 years. Donald Trump saying he'll be reinstated in August. How likely is this? Oh, that's a question made for Scott. How likely? Let's put it this way. You'll sooner see a squadron of winged monkeys flying out of his ass in formation, wearing matching sequined uniforms and singing show tunes, than you'll see Trump being reinstated as president in August, or any other month. And I mentioned this line last night when we first heard the news. Is Trump a blot on American democracy or a harbinger of things to come? This question makes me think back to a line from Red Fox's stand-up comedy act, if you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. It's over for Trump politically. He's either too delusional to realize it, or he knows and is too afraid to admit it. I do expect him to be busy in the near future, but he won't be campaigning for another 4-year term in office. Wasn't right about that. He'll be scrambling frantically to keep his ass out of jail. Of course, this raises an interesting possibility. Will Trump do what Lyndon LaRouche did and try to conduct a campaign from behind bars? However it plays out, it'll be hugely entertaining to watch Trump melt down completely. How do good people support Donald Trump? Mindlessly, as a rule. Where do you think Trump is going? Trump is a demented, delusional, inept fool, and he is going to jail. He's going directly to jail. He will not pass go, and he will not collect $200. You really can. You can hear it in Scott's voice, can't you? This is kind of Scott at his best. Are there Trump supporters who now realize they were conned? Oh, maybe a few actually do fall into that category. The rest of them willingly hopped into the GOP's Trump-mobile for a fun-filled cruise down Bullshit Boulevard. One expects ill-informed and less discerning voters to be so easily fooled, but party leaders are another story entirely. They have engaged in nothing less than a naked power grab in terms of getting elected and raking in millions in campaign funds. Whether real or perceived, Trump does not hold sway over the GOP leadership. He is the GOP standard-bearer with more than a little influence over who the party's power players and voters are going forward. We'll definitely see the effects of this sad dynamic in the 2022 midterms and probably in the general election of 2024. The irony of it all is that the GOP is weaker than ever, thanks to Trump. A small handful of GOP politicians get this, but there's little they can do about it. It's like the esteemed political observer Red Fox once wisely noted, when you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. How did you feel when you first heard the news that Donald Trump was leaving office? I was so excited by the news, my heart was pounding like a zebra in a top hat, tap dancing on a fresh plate of lemon jello. Scott Gold. And thank you to Dave and the Blind, kicking in on Ralph's challenge in memory of Scott. In memory of one of my comedic heroes, we may all be screwed, but we should still laugh. Rest in peace, Scott. We're all screwed, Robin. Indeed. Indeed. And then this little take. Curious question. If Trump had Rush Limbaugh's radio program, and he did, till Rush up and died, I can hear Scott now. Hey, Rush, catch the pineapple. Would that provide him with a greater platform and influence than serving as president? Scott said, I worked in radio on and off from 1972 to 1998. All over the country and in various music or talk formats. I still get several radio industry publications. In one, about 6 weeks or so ago, it was suggested that Trump might well be a good fit in the old Limbaugh time slot. I doubt he'll be offered the job, but if he is, I doubt he'd take it. On the other hand, before he got into politics, Mike Pence was a talk radio host in Indiana. Don't be surprised if he's offered the job. You know, sometimes, you know, when you're in a sort of ad hoc psychic, you miss one now and then. While the Trump wing of the GOP would lose their minds over it, the people at the level of power brokers and decision makers for things like this see it differently. There's nothing the establishment GOP fears more than the Trump crazies and cultists taking control of things. If they did, it would likely kill the GOP. Their last hope may be well be found in giving Pence 3 hours a day, 5 days a week radio outpost to make the case for sanity and GOP traditions. As to whether people would listen, I think they would. And like I said, there are a lot of these. Do you feel the election is rigged? If so, how and why? The 2020 election was most assuredly rigged, but only in the same sense as a vintage seagoing vessel is rigged, that is, with sails correctly arranged and fully operable, so as to move the ship forward and away from dangerous waters or rocks along the coast. And it goes on for some time. in that vein. But there's something else. I messaged back and forth with, we have $40 to go, Ralph. So we have $40 to go on your challenge, which in turn will get us down to only $600 to go to get caught up so far. Theo says, the Scott Marinoff Memorial Cowbell Award. I propose that real quality and commentary be given a memorial ring status dedicated to our comrade Scott. Yes? I don't know. We'll have to work out the details, but I kind of like that idea. The lesson we should all learn. Stephen, New York. Said, Scott and I tried a number of times to speak via phone after speaking on one occasion. We never did. I'd like to impart this lesson. Always take the time to call someone, even if you think you don't have the time. Truth be told, when you think about someone, always write, call, or whatever it is you do to stay in touch. I don't often shed tears for a person I've never met. I did today. Oh, but Steve, you did meet him. We all knew Scott. My vocal pattern is verging perilously close to William Shatner. We all knew Scott. Scott, we knew of Scott what Scott wanted us to know of him. It would have been lovely to have met him in person, but he was reticent about that. But those who were lucky enough to meet him were probably stunned, thrilled, tickled to have done so. I think about, Joey and Billable, because they called one time from San Diego as Billable and Joey were on the road. But still, the larger message, when you have an urge to speak to someone, do make that effort. Do, please. I've shed a lot of tears, Steve. I have. But going back to pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, we messaged a bit last night. And he reminded me that on Christmas Eve, 2020, he had been chatting with Scott. And Scott told Steve to tune in to Washington Journal on C-SPAN on Christmas morning, because he was going to call. Steve said, not an easy task, for it's very difficult to get through. Anyway, around that time frame, we were running hard with the It's All About the Cat theme here on the Horn. Scott mentioning the cat in the call was his way of giving a subliminal nod to the Horn family. Steve said, I'm really going to miss him. And that's been the theme for me as well, Steve, all day long. Really going to miss him. Somehow or another, when he said, we're all screwed, Bob, it managed to make me feel a little less like we were all screwed. And he jumped from we're all screwed Bob to we're all screwed Robin without missing a beat. Thank you, Brendan, in Oregon. Thank you so much. We are now halfway on Ralph's challenge and Scott's loving memory. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, if you weren't directly friends with Scott, you're not going. You can't see the post from his niece. I tried to send it along to Brother Deacon Asa last night, and content not available. But let's go to that moment, Christmas morning, 2020, because it's right there, forever, in the Washington Journal archive. Not sure what time of day it was.
Over $100 million in the Senate runoffs that are set to determine which party controls the upper chamber, the runoff election in Georgia on January 5th. We'll hear from Scott calling from San Diego. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy holidays to you and to everybody watching around the globe this morning. And I cannot do my usual Christmas custom this year, and I'll tell you why. This is the first Christmas since the mid-80s that I haven't had a cat. It's just me, and until about a year ago, it was me and the cat. But the Christmas tradition that I cannot do this year because I don't have a cat, it was always a joy to put the cat down under the tree and have the cat creep up to the manger pageant underneath the tree and knock the figurines around and leave a dead mouse. So I can't do that this year, but it lives in my heart and my memory, and, you know, maybe Santa Claus will show up eventually and bring me a cat
far,
or a tree
far,
or a
far
manger.
Be it from me to judge anybody's holidays tradition, but that's both one of the funniest and most bizarre ones I've heard, Scott.
Well, what should I say? This is America, the land of the free and the home of the Whopper, you know? So there we go.
Are you going to get a cat before next Christmas?
I don't know. You know, the funny thing was she died around the end of January of this year, and I've always had a cat. And, you know, then the COVID thing cropped up, and I said, well, I'm at a high-risk age group and health group. And I said, well, you know, maybe I'll just hold off, and maybe this will pass, and then I'll go adopt a new cat. And that's what I'm hoping for. Maybe in 2021 we can get a new cat.
Good.
And get things rolling again.
We want video of that when you do.
Okay. Well, I'm glad
Thank you, Scott. Clearwater, Florida. Robert.
Pure, unmitigated Scott. In that case, on Christmas morning of 2020, it was, in fact, about the cat. So, yes, I guess Emilio's just now catching up. Scott has left us. Scott has gone to that big remote broadcast in the sky. Ooh, there's a lot going on down here. Hot dogs, balloons for the kids, pony rides. And I cannot begin to say how very much I'll miss him. And so this evening, afternoon, it's about 5:30 here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. But this afternoon, I've got the same stuff to go through. I mean, not the same stuff, but the same sort of stuff that we talk about in any other day. But I want to make something clear. If you just want to call in and share your thoughts about Scott, don't hesitate. He'd love that. He would absolutely love that. It can be a little sort of private memorial service for him, which he also would have liked. So if you are so inclined, ring in on the stress line. If I had a second Bluetooth channel, we'd create a we're all screwed line too, in memory of Scott. Maybe it's going to become the we're all screwed stress line, the one that we do have. Or anymore. Maybe the Scrooge stress line. I'm workshopping here. Bear with me. I've thought and thought and thought and just gone over in my memory all the laughter, the frustration. I'm glad he lived to see the end of White House Plumbers. Because he loved that madcap, wacky, assault on constitutional governance. Gordon Liddy and the like. E. Howard Hunt. Richard Nixon. Stephen New York said, I laughed out loud. Land of the free and the home of the whopper. That was Scott. Oh, I think he used Land of the Free and Home of the Whopper here in conversation as well a couple of times. I like to think there was a Burger King executive, somebody from Yum Brands maybe, watching that morning. Hey, Muriel, we got some free press from some guy talking about his cat in California. Brendan says, I can still hear Punky cawing in the background or chirps meowing, and of course Scott's voice. At 78 years old, I have come to miss so many friends, and Scott being the latest, I will miss him. The old goat contingent is now diminished. Quote, and if it comes to that, that you should rise and I should not, I raise to you a parting glass. Good night, and joy be with you all. I know that. I'm familiar. Cry every time I hear it. Says Brendan, peace, lady. Peace. Brendan, peace. My friend. Well, okay, that's, you know what? That's appropriate. Randy Radar said, Scott often, most often called in on Skype. It's the We're All Screwed Skype line henceforward. Maybe it is. And maybe that's an appropriate time to mention, you know, I changed Skype numbers a couple of months ago. Just one more effort to make Bob go away. And so that number is now on Skype, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And, maybe it's the We're All Screwed line. The Screwed line. The Stress line and the Screwed line. And if you recall, the reason Bill Miller became known as Mr. Stress was because he was married to a nurse in a psychiatric ward. And their coded word for, we've got a patient who's out of hand was Mr. Stress, come to room whatever. Mr. Stress, room whatever. So maybe on those days when you're feeling particularly, we're all screwed, that's when you use the Skype line. And so, like I said, if you want to do a little alfresco eulogizing, and the merrier the better, I have no doubt Scott would approve. And I'm trying to figure out a way to, it's not trying to figure out a way, it's trying to figure out the right words to send along to his family to let them know how much he meant to us and that our thoughts are with them. Christopher writes, subject line, Scott, having a rough time keeping it together. I can see it now, Scott on a pony with a balloon in one hand and a hot dog in the other, riding over to the big bearded juvenile delinquent, placing a dunce cap on his head and telling him to get in the corner for a timeout. Then he'd ride over to Red Fox and try to finally get him out of the toilet. Fridays will never be the same. No. No, there is a... There is an empty seat around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, isn't there? And it is, in fact, a seat that... Really? And we all have our different gifts and our different talents, but... It's a seat that can never be occupied again. Scott was one of those people who, once made, they broke the mold. Laura just jumped in. Thank you, Laura. Laura in Massachusetts. Finishing off Ralph's challenge, in memory of Scott. Laura said, in memory of Scott, I have listened to your podcast for years and always loved how Scott could crack you up. Jesus, he did. Any vague pretense of professionalism. Well, as he liked to say, that good ship's sailed and sank when we got going. Laura adds, and in my house, it's always about the cats. Lord, I know. I do know. My dear sister, Miss Terry, was writing me earlier today about the fact that she was a little miffed at the cat she tends. His name is Rhett, and he decided to be a little asshole today. She sent me a picture of her leg. He got out. She chased him down, and he did not want to go back in the house. Miss Terry won that one, but at the cost of some flesh. I got to tell you, I would appreciate your help this evening. Because, I got stories. Sure. Hey, let's go and do the final tally of the Second Amendment freedom outbreaks in this country over the 4th of July, Independence Day holiday. Let's do that. I don't know. There's a lot of maybes out there. And if you would like to just spend a little time, and I don't know, we could probably, if you want to, add multiple persons to a Skype call and kind of round table it. I think it's fitting if you want to, or one at a time, fine by me too. Steve in New York says, this is personal, but I keep asking myself what the hell is going on. In the past month or so, a young woman, 35 at the time, contracted pancreatic cancer. A friend died of Lou Gehrig's disease, but the husband of my fellow parishioner, Joe, died suddenly last Friday. Now, Scott, my God, I hope there's a reprieve. Robin, I can get over hearing Scott was, but in his inimitable expressions of genuine optimism, I'm going to decide not to be sad, but to assume a brighter day. Yeah. Because we all came away from our conversations with him the better for having had them. And as frustrating and as furious as the news of the day can get, Scott somehow made it more bearable. Oh, here's one he would have had a blast with, though. The right-wing hissies, the shrieking and the barking and the grunting and the hooting and the braying can probably be heard at Leon Scum's beach house on Mars. Lab testing has confirmed that, yes, in fact, cocaine, was found in the White House West Wing Sunday evening. There is an ongoing investigation as to how the cocaine got there. Another one of those moments where I love journalism. Yesterday, it was the police commissioner in Philadelphia saying, "We have no idea how this mass shooting happened." And, oh, God, we've got more on that one. "It was the trans!" Oh, stop. We'll get to that, too. I know how the cocaine got in the West Wing. Someone brought cocaine into the West Wing. And not to overanalyze this, but I suppose you could use carbon 14 dating to date the to the cocaine. I'm sure there's, you know, it's once part of a living substance, so it's going to have some carbon 14 in it. But the number you would get back would be, well, it happened any time between 1857 and 2023. So how did it get there? A human being brought it in. One way or the other. The real question for me is, how long was it there? The white powder was found during a routine search, a source said, and a preliminary field test had showed the substance tested positive for cocaine. It was on the ground floor of the White House near the West Executive Entrance, where visitors are instructed to typically drop off their cell phones. Maybe they don't have a rule about dropping off your Bolivian marching powder. I don't know. And so there are, the general public can't, but some visitors can tour parts of the West Wing. And there were tours this past Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said, "The president thinks this is incredibly important to get to the bottom of how it got there. Where this was discovered is a heavily traveled area where many White House West Wing, I should be even more specific, West Wing visitors come through this particular area. I just don't have anything more to share." And that gives rise to a couple of thoughts. Imagine touring the White House and coming out of your tour of the West Wing and saying, "Well, damn, I think I lost my blow." Because it's not like if you lose your cell phone that you can go back and retrace your steps.
"Excuse me, I'm looking for some cocaine that fell out of my jacket pocket."
No! No. But then because I'm a paranoid, because I've been doing this for so long, the first thing I thought of was, I wonder which maggot planted some cocaine for later discovery. And the right wing is thinking that too. Ralph's on the one hand says, maybe it was Trader Tot, you know, Donald Jr., or maybe Eric the Dumber left it somewhere along the way. While on the other hand, Matt in San Francisco says, cocaine at the White House? It must have been Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're all fit to lose our mind. Scott started that one, too. So I guess they're narrowing it down to from Friday night to Sunday, when West Wing tours usually occur. The tours are led by staff, by members of Congress, and others who have that privilege. The discovery allegedly took place in an area widely accessible to anyone visiting the White House. Members of Congress. Can you think of any members of Congress that you might be a little curious as to whether they were doing a little, skiing the slopes of Mount Sinus? Scott would like that one. Mount Sinus, get it? Not Mount Sinai, Mount Sinus. Yeah. Meanwhile, they're hopping up and down and flinging poo over in the House Oversight Committee, where, oh, what's his name? James Comer, that noted genius from Kentucky stand. A statement released there said,
"The U.S. Secret Service allowed the substance in the White House through their extensive screening process that Congress funds. The Oversight Committee will request a briefing from Secret Service."
And that's just one of those moments where you sit up and you just kind of say, you know, I don't do coke. The go-go 1980s in Atlanta, Georgia are long since over. And I don't do it. What did Ringo Starr sing? And I said, no, 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 I don't no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. I mean, the fundraising goal is only $600, but I have no business singing. No, thank you, please. It only makes me sneeze, and then it makes it hard to find the door. The no-no song. Who takes their cocaine with them to the White House? You know, something about this just makes me smell marginal trailer queen all over it. Or, wait, the man with the largest forehead on Earth. Matt, it just gets worse. Or maybe it wasn't Adderall all those years that Nitwit Nero was snorting. Yeah, as Frank says, Frank in Iowa, thinking of Scott. Robin, get Don on the phone. Where are those pictures I was supposed to see? What the hell happened to my cocaine? Damn it, there's a hole in my pants pocket. Yeah, Steve in New York, people in politics using cocaine or barbiturates or the marijuanas or alcohol or anti-narcotic here. Oh, gee, what a shocker. Steve adds, my money is on Dr. Ronnie the Candyman Jackson leaving it there. And, of course, there will be grunting and braying for several days over cocaine in the White House. See, that's what they got to keep Joe Biden all hopped up on the cocaine, because otherwise he can't find his pants. That was what Nancy Mace of South Carolina, the maggot, said. We just got taken to the cleaners by the guy who can't find his pants. Marianne asks, I've listened to Head On for over a decade and enjoyed Scott so much. I will miss him dearly. How do you spell his full name? Scott, S-C-O-T-T. Marinoff, M-A-R-I-N-O-F-F. M-A-R-I-N-O-F-F. Where might I find his obituary? I do not know. I do not know. I learned about it last night during the program, and frankly, I've been kind of shell-shocked ever since. Cynthia adds, last August, I lost my youngest sister and best friend to pancreatic cancer. I found out about her cancer on January 3rd of last year, and knowing she was going to die, and then she did, I spent almost all of last year in grief. I cried my eyes out. My God, do I know grief and pain from the loss, and it's no fun. It hurts to lose people you know and care about. And knowing the pain of everyone now missing and grieving for Scott, it hardly seems adequate, but I still want to send my sympathies and condolences to you, Scott's family, and everyone in the Horn community. May he always find a fond place in your memories. Cynthia. Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you. As long as my brain keeps functioning, Scott will have a place there and in my heart. And I think the same goes for the entire Horn Family Community Congregation. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for the grieving you had to deal with and the agony of the passing of your sister. Awful. Rise in power, Scott M., writes Scary Jerry. There were 1,000 reasons I love Scott. I must have hurt him 1,000 times and truly treasured him when I did. Scott was the last of the radio Mohicans, someone who could probably run the transmitter to the microphone, and someone, the last time I heard him, had Google-like memory access powers. He was encyclopedic and learned. Scott called me on my shit twice. He was right on both times, even millions of miles away. His ear was true. I got a genuine prayer meeting Wednesday miracle to report. It happened last week, Monday. Whenever I hear the song Titanium by Guetta and Sia, somebody dies. I've heard this damn song since the death of my mother. First off in the distance and then louder and louder. I heard the echoes of Titanium last Monday, June 29th-ish, midday. I fucking panicked. I call my daughters. I call my dad. I call my wife. That song's running 95% accurate. I fell asleep and drifted off yesterday. As soon as you said Marinoff, I knew. I'd seen that name online on Quora, and I knew he was gone because he felt gone for about 3 weeks. I guess that the family found out about last week. Actually, it was June 13th. The posting was, Jerry. I'm glad we are gathered to commemorate. I love you all. I got to work, so I'll catch the replay. Careful with the upload. Buy a candle, put some cat food, and start feeding the neighborhood cat. That's what Scott would do. I'm bulletproof, nothing to lose. Fire away, fire away. Goodbye, Scott. You're a billion miles away from pineapples. Catch that rainbow staircase. You're on your way. Scary Jerry has a way of being profound and in a manner that I couldn't touch it. He goes places in his mind that I can't. But the last of the radio Mohicans, I love that. Oh, that's just sweet. Hold on. Steve in New York says, if I can ever do it, I'm going to import coffee and call it Marinoff Premium. It even sounds fancy schmancy. You know, there are coffee companies where you can tell them you want your own roast and they'll put it in a bag and they'll call it whatever you want it to be called. River Moon does something like that, I think. Because, of course, there's the Malloy blend of Java that they marketed for Mike. Marinoff Premium. Probably needs like the Russian double eagle on it or something. And I mean, no reference to, you know, the present, but no. Something absolutely regal. And it should probably feature Scott's photograph from his Facebook page of him with that pipe clenched in his teeth. Steve from Georgistan says, thanks for playing the Scott Washington Journal clip from Christmas 2020. It had a strong visual component as well, because the host broke character, and he did. He was giggling and smirking and cracking up with suppressed laughter. That rarely, if ever, happens. Only Scott could have that effect on a Washington Journal mod. That clip redefines bittersweet. It does. It does. No. No, that is not his photo. The Facebook photo is, Lou, is of a guy, an older gent, with a pipe clenched in his teeth. Marinoff Premium, says Steve in New York, imported all the way from Leningrad. And I think I'm going to make, I'm going to make it a tradition now. I'm going to have one martini on New Year's Eve. Now, mine may wind up being about, you know, a quart, but it'll be one martini. So we've managed to do an hour of radio, an hour of missing Scott. But since we, and Scott would enjoy this, as I said, the White Wing is already going bananas over cocaine. It's running all around my brain. And naturally, a guy who sounds like he's probably got a friend who is a retailer of same. Nah, he's got enough money. He probably knows a wholesaler. I mean, of course, Alex Jones. Well, he's already coming. Not even going to try to describe it. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape. Oh, dear.
And there's a lot of other big red meat topics that are really interesting we could talk about for hours that I'm not going to spend much time on because they're really diversions. Like a big bag of cocaine found at the White House over the weekend.
Big bag.
The scanners picked up that they found a possible hazardous material. And
hold on. I have read news account after news account after news account of cocaine in the White House. And I have yet to see big bag, large bag, any sort of weight and measurement, but Alex here is a big bag of cocaine. How big? How big a bag, Alex? Because the opposite end of that spectrum is Richard Pryor talking about Leon Spinks getting busted for 50 cents worth of cocaine. Scott loved Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor said, 50 cents worth of cocaine melt before you get the paper open. If you've never heard that portion of his act, do yourself a favor. Scott would be proud of you for listening to it later. Okay, big bag of cocaine. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York says, Alex Jones, big bag of cocaine, pot, meat kettle. What do you think's in that paleo chocolate chicken bone beverage?
And the story itself, that Hunter Biden was there, and it's probably his cocaine, that he's above the law,
told
is a new story. If you just go one-dimensionally, it's not that important. It's all part of the humiliation of America with Pedo Joe and his crackhead Chinese communist agent son. But the fact that the Secret Service called a hazmat crew when they've got their own...
So Hunter Biden's a crackhead, but this was apparently powder...
Hazmat team, and let it go out over the scanners was really a call for help.
Really? I can't wait to hear the rest of this.
And we've seen a lot of leaks out of the Secret Service on Biden because they think, and they're right, he's extremely dangerous. And the people controlling him are extremely dangerous. But the fact that they called in the local hazmat team saying, oh, gee, we don't know what this bag of drugs is. Undoubtedly with Hunter's crack pipes and the rest of it, he's been staying at the White House as of late. and accompanying his father almost every weekend to Camp David. You see him shuffling, obviously drugged out of his mind, with a red backpack on. What do you think's in that? Now, that's a huge story.
Red backpack?
By what it tells you.
What?
That the Secret Service put out on the radio hazardous material found and then called the local hazmat team to come deal with it and say, gee, what's this? Because they're fed up. We're not going to cover up a big bag of cocaine and crack pipes that are on ours.
Crack pipes. Now there's crack pipes.
Of course,
pipes.
They're doing a sweep and they find it. Oh, gee, what's this?
Beaks. Flies with beaks.
Is it anthrax? We better look. We better call in another agency who doesn't even know what's going on. Because I guarantee you, if the Secret Service called that in themselves and made a federal issue, those agents would be found dead in car wrecks or murder suicides of their families within days. But the tyranny and the intimidation can only last so long.
The tyranny and the intimidation? Huh? Now, he's not reading any news stories that I'm not reading. I mean, granted, he has his network of denizens from Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium, who generally live under bell jars there. And maybe they're telling him about the crack pipes and the powder. Alex, you smoke crack in a crack pipe, dipshit. Dipshit. Powder cocaine? Not so much. Of course, he leaves out the fact that the Biden family wasn't even in Washington, D.C. at the time it was found. Oh, well, yeah.
Hey, Pop, can we go back? I forgot my blow.
No! So I guess now the Secret Service is in desperate fear for their lives. I'm struggling here. You can't. Ordinary brains don't work like maggot brains. And remember, Parliament Funkadelic, was it, that had that amazing song, Maggot Brain? How prophetic they were. It was a busy day on my filthy morning habit today, this morning. Largely, at least in part, because of the speechifying or boof social messaging of Nitwit Nero. Yesterday, Julius Geezer wrote,
"Happy 4th of July to everyone. We are working hard. We will take back our country and make America great again. The 2024 election is our last great chance."
Of course, the previous day he referred to Special Counsel Jack Smith as a
major sleazeball
and said that he was part of the vast conspiracy to rig the 2024 election. And I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but the fact of the matter is, if you look at the madness of Geezer Disgustus, and you look at it within the lens of what people with real big coke problems sound like, Well, the Venn diagram of people with bad coke problems and the Venn diagram of what Nitwit Nero sounds like, they're a circle. And remember, any time a Republican, especially a maggot, begins to go on and on and on, it's one of two things. Every time, it's either projection or, everybody, confession. Nitwit Nero didn't even go out yesterday. Instead, it was that Truth Social doofus social business. Don't know why, but was. But there they were this morning on my Filthy Morning Habit, sort of, well, I don't know, gobsmacked.
Yeah, making himself into George Washington. The obvious distinction there, one of many, is that George Washington was a soldier. Donald Trump chose not to be one. But what does it say to you about the state of this Republican primary that Donald Trump thinks, I can just stay home, I can sit at my golf club and post on social media, and that works for me. I don't even have to go out and do an event. I don't even have to go out and press the flesh and do the things that other people feel.
Just NB real quick. Nota bene. I think the folks there at the MSNBC Morning Zoo crew need to adopt some other language, perhaps from Jeff Tiedrich. Willie Geist just said he can sit there at his golf club and blah, blah, blah. No. He can sit there at his tacky-ass golf motel. There we go. And by the way, Matt in San Francisco, backpack of cocaine? Matt says, if you need a backpack to carry your cocaine, you definitely have a problem habit. I mean, most good outdoor backpacks are measured in volume, as in liters of volume. I mean, my little Patagonia backpack, I think, is 32 liters, something like that. Do you know how much cocaine that is? You could carry a sizable bit of cocaine and say something the size of my little evening clutch. You know, it's got a little wrist strap and it pops over your wrist. Now you don't wander off without it. You could probably carry an ounce in that little thing. A backpack? A red backpack? How did he know it was red? But anyway, they were aghast, I tell you.
Feel like they need to do to get elected in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, in my opinion, one of the saddest things that's happened in modern politics is the fact that so many candidates don't think it's important to go out and do what we call in politics retail, which is shaking hands, looking people in the eye, talking to them, answering their questions. That's going away. And obviously for Donald Trump, he is much more comfortable at his very luxurious golf club with his thumbs on a device tweeting obscenities about the sitting president. You know, it's interesting to me when I look at the four pictures that are on the screen right now. You know, I guarantee you that most of America that is looking at this screen right now goes, well, who are those other two guys? Yeah. And that's the other thing that's interesting about this. We have a bunch of candidates that really have absolutely no name recognition, and they're not going to get name recognition by marching in a small 4th of July parade in New Hampshire. That's not going to do it. They're going to have to raise big money in order for anybody to go, well, who is that? Other than say, who is that? So I right now, Donald Trump's in a commanding position. And think about that, Republican Party. You've got a guy who says, F Biden on the 4th of July, and he's your man. It is unbelievable.
So many of those second-tier Republican candidates have issues whether or not they'll even qualify for the first debate, which is just a month or so away. There's certain thresholds they've got to hit. It's unclear even, like right now, even Nikki Haley and Tim Scott, though likely will get in. It's not a sure thing. Chris Christie as well. So, Caddy, let's talk about the Trump strategy here. Our friends at Axios did some reporting actually noting just how few events he's actually had since becoming a declared candidate, despite his bluster about his energy and his robust schedule. That's actually not the case. But the Trump team has made a calculation. I mean, some of this might be Trump's laziness, but beyond that, they've made a calculation. Well, we don't need to do this. We don't need to be out there. We can parachute in, have a big event, have a big rally. We'll dominate headlines for days. He can sit on Truth Social wishing a happy 4th of July to the haters and the losers out there. He might not even participate in that first debate because he's got such a big lead and he doesn't want to elevate the rest. Do you see that strategy backfiring, or is that actually the right way to do it for someone like him?
At the moment, there's no evidence that it's backfiring, right? In poll after poll, his lead is increasing, not decreasing. So the strategy of doing the occasional big rally and getting a ton of media attention, because whatever he does, whether it's being indicted, whether it's tweeting what he tweets or sending out social media posts on the 4th of July, we talk about it. And he gets an enormous amount of attention just through doing that. So if I was his campaign, I'd be saying, carry on doing what you're doing. I mean, I guess the only thing to remember is that in December of 2007, Barack Obama was 20 points behind Hillary Clinton, and there is still time, potentially, for one of these candidates to break through. One assumes it would have to be Ron DeSantis because he's the only one who has the money and some polling and has been consistently second in the polls. So I suppose there is still time for him to break through. But I don't see any reason that the Trump campaign would trade strategies, given that what they're doing is working so well for them at the moment.
So, Claire, let's look at this from the other side. We saw President Biden last night at the White House responding to the cheers of 2024. He is in it. He is running a year from now. Yes, a full year from now. He'll be getting ready for the Democratic convention and then the home stretch to try to win re-election. Unless something dramatic happens, it's Donald Trump's to lose at this point, despite everything coming down the pike in Georgia, more investigations from Jack Smith, a return to New York for Donald Trump. There's a lot of legal trouble ahead. But if you are Joe Biden at that event last night, waking up this morning on July 5th, how are you feeling with a year and change to go to Election Day?
I think you're feeling pretty good. The big question mark that is looming over the election next year is, in what state will the economy be this time next year? If these infrastructure projects all kick off across the country, Joe Biden will have a great opportunity to remind everyone that he didn't have 14,000 infrastructure weeks with no results. He actually is fixing bridges and saving lives with highway improvements and water projects and grid projects and more internet in rural areas. He's going to have a lot to talk about. And if those are kicking off, it's going to help the economy stay stable through the election. I think the only thing that Joe Biden has to worry about really is if there is a blip in the economy and gas prices go up or there is another inflationary spike, then no matter what he does, he's in trouble.
Not a lot to take issue with it. I mean, the bridge thing in Philadelphia is absolutely fascinating. I'm absolutely convinced, given absolutely a workout, that if this was the nitwit Nero administration, he would have gone and, I don't know, thrown gravel at it. This is what happens. This is a competent administration. And they're actually kind of good at the notion of governing. And I just, frankly, some of this is not within Biden's control. It depends on members of the media pointing out true things, through making true statements like how effective they have been. But there's a little bit of other news that feels kind of breaking-ish. Jack Smith has invited Rudy Giuliani to speak with him on a number of occasions. On a number of topics, like seizing voting machines, and an argument that happened about that. Well, turns out Giuliani is meeting with Jack Smith under what is referred to as a cooperation agreement, which may lead to a proffer of evidence. And generally speaking, you only do the proffer if you're about to do a deal. Which means, in turn, that Nitwit Nero may be about to find himself under a bus that is probably being driven drunk by, well, Rudy Giuliani. And we're finding out more and more about, you know, just what a petty, dangerous dictator Nitwit Nero wanted to be. Miles Taylor, who is releasing another book, we talked about it last week, Blowback, A Warning to Save Democracy from the Next Trump. Well, his publisher's sharing out some of the juicier excerpts. One of which has Miles Taylor, who was the Homeland Security Chief of Staff, explaining that less well known is the ex-president's envy of private armies like Putin's wayward Wagner Group. The former president once sought his own mercenaries and might do so again if he wins back the White House. It's a fascist thing. Remember, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, he of the white go-go boots, has basically tried to set up his own private army in Florida, outside the reach and scope of, say, the National Guard and the ability of the president to nationalize it, federalize it. Well, according to Miles Taylor, in 2017, when Nitwit Nero was demanding that we leave Afghanistan right there, right then, that there minute, and, of course, maggots were behind him, and then they had a hissy when Joe Biden followed through and we did leave Afghanistan. You know, what? 20 years after, well, we never should have gone in. Well, then they had a hissy. And Miles Taylor says that he was still at DHS at the time, and he was afraid that Nitwit Nero was pulling out too fast. Stormy Daniels could probably answer that question. Sorry. Miles Taylor said it would allow terrorists to reconstitute and plot against the United States, and Trump, on the other hand, seemed most worried about, of course, money. He said he was tired of spending it abroad and wanted to focus on domestic political priorities. And on his own, he came up with this notion that, well, he'd just put in his own mercenary force. The mercenary force he wanted to put in was, and we talked, daggummit, it just happens here, doesn't it? Last week we talked about the fact that Eric Prince's Blackwater is fundamentally a mirror image of Evgeny Prigozhin's Wagner Group. And Nitwit Nero wanted to hire Blackwater and put them in Afghanistan. Miles Taylor said, I explained that this was a horrible idea for many reasons, not least of which was that a Trump-controlled mercenary group would circumvent public scrutiny, erode checks and balances around the use of force, and undermine confidence in the American military. But it wasn't a mere whim. News of the discussions leaked that top White House advisors had apparently consulted. This is the chilling part. They'd already consulted with Eric Prince directly. And there was a thick briefing memo that was given to Nitwit Nero, and it exceeded the man's attention span. It was a book of some 50 to 60 pages. And so he, Miles Taylor, had to distill those 60 pages into a two-page book written like Trump talks so that Nitwit Nero could actually comprehend it. Taylor writes in his book, "So overnight in my office, I crafted a basic Wikipedia-level primer about why America was in Afghanistan and what was at stake, all in the Trumpian vernacular. The title of the unclassified version felt like a parody, Afghanistan, How to Put America First and Win. If we pulled out of the country too fast, I wrote, we would be mocked as losers by terrorists. If we wanted to be winners, we needed to fight smarter and harder, and then cut a great deal to hand over security to the Afghans. I made no mention of deploying a private army to finish the job." And because he read the two pages and
always wants to be a winner, remember, I wrote a book, it was called The Art of the Deal, and you only make the deal if you plan on winning.
And then he came back and said, yeah,
I still want to hire Eric Prince. I want my own army, and I want to overthrow the government in Venezuela. I need 5,000 men.
Then the National Security Council had to explain to him again why that couldn't happen and convince him that having Trump Wagners wouldn't be the best idea. But apparently Taylor was chilled to the bone and said, next time we won't be so lucky. That was what he said someone else said to him in 2017 and 2018. We'll have a military run by mercenaries. Because all along, over the four nightmare years, he thought it was his military. My generals, my military, you've heard those lines. We have a low IQ Catiline on our hands. In faith, we do. Meanwhile, Mike Pencilneck Geek is, in fact, still trying to figure out who his constituency is, but more than that, running for president. Recently, higher-ups in Mavr Moscovy have said, war in Ukraine would end almost in days if only the United States would stop supporting Ukraine. You want peace in Ukraine? We bring peace, huh? Australia. Oh. Yeah, with things like that rumbling around, Mike Pencilneck Geek, who made an impromptu, or seemingly impromptu, visit to Ukraine last week. Well, he said that the invasion of Ukraine by Mother Moscovy is evil. And so he visited Bucha, where he saw the atrocities, or the scene of the atrocities committed by Russian troops. Wagner Group, who knows. And having described the invasion as evil, and this is chilling, he went on to say, I really left more resolved than ever that it is in our national interest to give the Ukrainian military the support they need to fight and repel this Russian invasion. I have no doubt that Vladimir Putin is now facing profound divisions within his own country and his own military. I have no doubt that if Vladimir Putin overran Ukraine, it would not be too long before he was speaking to, I suppose, Hewitt, before the Russian military crossed the border where we would have to send our fighting men and women to fight against them. And I'm relying on the Reagan Doctrine. I'm a guy who believes in that old Reagan Doctrine. Give me that old Reagan Doctrine. Give me that old Reagan Doctrine. Give me that old Reagan Doctrine. It's good enough for me. It was good for Cheney and Rumsfeld. It was good for Cheney and Rumsfeld. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. We can do a old gospel hymn. It was good for Cheney and Rumsfeld, and it's good enough for me. If you're willing to fight the enemies of the United States on your soil, we'll give you the means to fight them, and them, so our men and women in uniform don't have to fight them. And I'm going to continue to be a voice for that in this campaign and all across this country. Has he held any events, any rallies? Are they tiny enough to hold in a phone booth? I know. Halfway through the program, and y'all are quiet. Stress line's open. The screwed line is open. The screwed line is Robin Kincaidhorn on Skype, and you're welcome to jump in. Oh, by the way, the Skype link is up on the front page at headon.live. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. If you'd like to do a little front porchery, jump right in. And I don't know, we'll see if we can get a call going. But Brother Deacon Asa added, who are we kidding? It was Hunter Biden's nose candy. It was right next to his laptop nose candy. Haven't heard that in a while. Almost feels like there needs to be some 138 beats per minute disco music going with a phrase like that. Oh, and congratulations, Randy Radar. Randy Radar says, I'm supposedly putting earnest money down on a house tomorrow. I'd love to get a lap cat to go along with the house, but after spending for the house, I don't think I can afford the vet bills. Wish me luck, please. That is a cowbell of luck, Randy. And all of our fingers and various other digits are crossed in hopes for a positive outcome. Steve notes, my military and my generals, as you guessed, and of course you guessed it,
my documents.
Ta-da. Peace in Ukraine, Steve adds. A piece of Kiev, a piece of Crimea, a piece of the Donbass. Big old piece of Ukraine. There's your Russian peace in Ukraine. Oh, and in the wake of the domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021, a little bit of news coming out today. The lawyer, Lynn Wood, L. Lynn Wood, bag of cats, who was full on behind the bullshit efforts to overturn the election. Well, he's been facing a disbarment trial. And wasn't looking real good for him. So with the multiple disciplinary investigations in place against him, L. Lynn Wood decided to take the L. That was clever. And instead of facing full-on disbarment, he agreed to have his law license retired. He asked the bar to allow him to transfer to retired status effective immediately. And he said, I understand that this move is irrevocable and permanent and imminent. And I ain't going to be permitted to practice law in the state of Georgia or anywhere else outside of representing myself. And if he does choose to represent himself, all the lawyers in the group know he will have a fool for a client and an idiot for counsel. Over on his Telegram account, Telegram being a messaging platform, of course, owned and run by Russian interests. Surprise! He said, "Today I'm retired. The State Bar of Georgia has agreed to drop the disciplinary cases against me in return for my agreement to take the status of retired," all caps. If the shoe were on the other foot and this was happening in Georgia and then the lawyer was a Democrat, do you think they would have allowed him to just retire and walk away, or whether they said, no, we're going to deal with you? Because somehow I think that's what would have happened. The case is presently ongoing in California against John Eastman. He pushed the voter fraud bullshit. Inquiries dealt with as well by Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, Sidney Powell, leading lights of law. Yeah. So much for that old Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. quote that it is possible to live greatly in the law. Thanks for the story, Ralphs. Wonder how much money L. Lynn has stashed away. And then there's this. This is gross. But then again, when is it not? A toxic SOB by the name of Mark Robinson, we've talked about him before, is the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Stan. Speaking to the assholes with casseroles, that is to say, Planned Parenthood, otherwise known as the Brown Skirts, the Moms for Liberty, speaking to them on Sunday in Philadelphia, Mark Robinson, who, by the way, is a minister of the gospel, so we're told, didn't brush away Planned Parenthood's predilection for quoting Hitler. He doubled down. And here's the thing. Whether you're talking about Adolf Hitler, whether you're talking about Chairman Mao, whether you're talking about Stalin, whether you're talking about Pol Pot, whether you're talking about Castro in Cuba, or whether you're talking about a dozen other despots all around the globe, it's time for us to get back and start reading some of those quotes. Of course, Mark Robinson is as anti-Semitic as any human being in America is. As a black man, he's also a self-hating black man and spews anti-black rhetoric. According to Talking Points memo, he's also spread bullshit about the 2020 election. He's a Holocaust denier. So naturally, he was there invited to yakety-yak with the assholes with casseroles. And then this has been undercovered, frankly. The dateline on this was June 30th. Yeah, by way of comparison, do you recall when the guy with not the greatest behavioral health got within a block or so of Brett Kavanaugh's home and then took his phone and called 911 and said, I'm thinking some bad thoughts. You probably better come get me. And the cops showed up and they arrested the guy and they've charged him with everything except trying to kidnap the Lindbergh baby and bombing Amelia Earhart's aircraft. And the right wing went ballistic. The liberals are trying to kill the Supreme Court justices they disagree with. Our Supreme Court justices have a right to feel safe in their home and not have people protesting them when they do heinous shit to the American people. That line of crap. This is not seeing a lot of light, this next story. A dude was arrested recently. Dude's name, Taylor Taranto, T-A-R-A-N-T-O. A 37-year-old man was arrested last Thursday. He was spotted a few blocks from former President Barack Obama's home, and Secret Service agents actually chased him. The dude is already facing four misdemeanor charges relating to the domestic terror attack on the Capitol of January 6, 2021. Those four misdemeanors, yeah. The same slaps on the wrist that ever so many of the domestic terrorists have gotten. Disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds. So in federal court in D.C., the Justice Department kind of had to fess up to what the dude was carrying who was chased away from Barack Obama's home. What he was carrying reminds me of that brilliant Tim O'Brien novel, The Things They Carried. What he was carrying was a machete and two firearms and 400 rounds of ammunition, had it all in his van. He was apparently living in a van down by the river. Well, I don't know about the down by the river, but he was living in a van. And the authorities, the court, decided it would be best if he stayed incarcerated until the detention hearing that was scheduled for today. Now, there's more to Taylor Taranto than just the fact that he was a maggot who participated in domestic terrorism against the people of the United States by attacking the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Taylor Taranto is also a veteran of the United States Navy. He's also, according to the Tri-City Herald newspaper in Washington State, the webmaster for the Republican Party in Franklin County, Washington. Interviewed by the paper last year, he said, yeah, I'm volunteering for the Republican Party. He was actually near to Ashley Babbitt when that terrorist got all dead. And he bragged about it on Facebook and said, and posted a photo saying, this is me storming the Capitol, LOL. I'm only sharing this so someone will report me to the feds and we can get this party rolling. Have you heard much about this story? Because I haven't heard much about this story. But I think we should probably hear more about this story. A machete, 400, two firearms, and 400 rounds of ammunition. and at least nominally trained to use those firearms by virtue of his Navy days. Hey, Terrace, nice to hear you. Klanned Parenthood, Klanned Karenhood. Terrace says, bye, Scott. Thank you for the humor and the wisdom. Yeah. Thank you, Terrace. Lou with a question. So I can refuse to provide services to anyone I identify to be a fundamentalist Christian or a Republican? No, you can't just do that willy-nilly. You have to have a deeply held religious belief. So you better gin yourself up some religion, Lou. And say that, well, you can't, I don't know, if you want to work within Christianity, it's pretty loosely organized, you can say that you have a deeply held religious belief against serving people who make a mockery of Matthew 25. If you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've done it also unto me. Because, you see, the Alliance Defaming Freedom, that well-funded grift that lawyers up all of these lawsuits, and their grifty plaintiffs, all claim to have deeply held religious beliefs that make it impossible for them to bake cupcakes or pizzas or make a website for an imaginary plaintiff. We done been punked, y'all. The Supreme Court knew they were being punked, but, well, our six most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties didn't much care about that. But if you can claim to have a deeply held religious belief against serving people who mock the teachings of Jesus Christ, put the sign in your window, Lou. Put the sign in your window. Fifth column, Stephen New York asks, it strikes me, how did that guy even get President Obama's address? Why am I thinking the Secret Service is a fifth column? Well, this is the same Secret Service who sent out N-word jokes about President Obama right before he was inaugurated, so there's that. Yeah, okay. Roger says, if you want to open the porch, I've renamed it to the front porch for July 5th in memory of Scott, and I can start the call if you so desire. I'd like that. I would like that. I'd kind of like to hear some other thoughts from folks. And while I'm waiting for that to happen, let's see who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin.
How are you, Dave?
It's Dave in the barn.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not doing real good.
It's hard, isn't it?
I've been thinking about Scott all day. And what I like to remember is when he and I were on the line together and we'd kid around with you or we would start analyzing what's going on politically. He was one of the smartest, funniest people I knew. And I'm wondering, though, if he would have had some comments about the United States Supreme Moot Court. Did they bring any Georgetown Law School students to observe the argument? Because it seems that they took a case with people who don't actually have any legal standing.
Don't exist. It was entirely made up.
So this doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I could expect that from a moot court exercise. But not in the Supreme Court of the United States. I mean, when I was at IU many years ago, they held a two-day moot court. It was like on a Friday and Saturday. And it was presided over by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it was the usual kind of question. In that situation, was George Armstrong Custer guilty of dereliction of duty? The court found that yes, he was, but as a matter of law, it didn't really matter considering he died at the Little Bighorn. But that wasn't the purpose of the exercise. It was to give these young law students a chance to present an argument. And it sounds like that's what the Supreme Court in this session has been doing. Is there anybody that can take these guys, not the Supreme Court justices, but those bringing this funny case before a bar association and going, you know, you're really bringing shame upon the profession, and at least professionally censure them in some way?
No. I mean, I'm not trying to be short or cross. No. There is no body that can bring ethics enforcement against the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court.
No. I'm not talking about the justices. I'm talking about the lawyers who are bringing this garbage before the court.
Theoretically, yes, if someone filed a bar complaint against them, but the Alliance Defaming Freedom is filthy with money, and money talks.
Yeah, and white shoes don't walk. Yeah, they've got all their connections and they'll use them. God damn, Robin. I just the weird thing is yesterday when you announced Scott's death, I was just waking up from a nap, and I had the program on, and all of a sudden I hear, you know, the announcement, and I'm like, whoa. But I do know that he was very encouraging to me, especially when I was doing the, as I've been doing the real fake business, crazy days, it put a lot of things into perspective for me. He was only 10 years older than I am. Yeah. Didn't you say he was 68 when he died?
Yeah, he was coming up on his 69th birthday. He was days away.
So he was only about 10 years older than I am. That's too close for comfort. But I'll get off the line so others can call in. But I wanted to let everybody know that I'm doing relatively okay. Christine's doing well, and everybody down at the shop has been, sad. But Gladys did want me to ask you, Robin.
Yes.
Which Don were you wanting to get a hold of? She's got a whole list of them, but she doesn't know which one to try and call.
I'll have to sort that out at a later date because, well.
Different Dons have different functions. Yeah, I understand. Let me know. And then I can let Gladys know.
Don was Casey Kasem's producer. Or maybe his PR guy.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. Those pictures. It's about those pictures.
but I mean, she asked me if I was meeting my stepdad, and I said, no, he's been gone for quite a while.
Oh, so he's a gone don.
Oh, yes, he's a gone don. And it wasn't John Corleone, so we couldn't reach him. It was Long Island address.
Don Blankenship?
I mean, now that's a possibility. But if you figure it out, let me know, and I'll send a note to Gladys.
Do please, and give our regards, please, to Christine.
Take care of yourself.
All right, see you, Dave. Bye.
Good night.
Scott touched a lot of lives. There have been a number of remarks over on Facebook, where I announced it last night. Claire across the pond said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear about Scott's death. He was a wonder. And Dave down in Kentucky Stan said, RIP, Scott, you will be profoundly missed. You meant so much to so many people. Condolences to his family and friends. Carl out in Arizona said, my thoughts are with you. Scott was such a great conversationalist, and his good heart was always apparent. Kenda in Missouri said, I've been concerned about Scott's absence. I enjoyed his reminiscing about things in common with many of us. I will miss his voice and the great conversations. Chad said, thank you for sharing this. Robin will always remember Scott. Mark said, Scott's voice, life experiences, and wry wit will be missed. Rest easy, Sir Scott. Haley and Arkenstan, I'm going to miss the conversation Scott and Robin had on air, as well as Scott's uttering of, but that's not why I called. And it never was it? And Tamara, I don't know if you're listening down San Diego way, but I hope you're okay, because Tamara had written to me saying that she too was worried about him. Nipper said, I recall him calling in early June 2023, heard his voice and listened to the episode live. You ended the call with him when the show came to an end. It may have been a few days before he died. And I just keep coming back to the fact that I hope he died as close to painlessly as one human being can go. That's what I've got at this point. I don't even know if he was able to reach out to anyone. Let's go over to the screwed line, where we have a little front porch going on to memorialize Scott and check in. Hey, Roger, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I was working on stuff and listening to the program, and when I heard about Scott, I came in and set everything up because you'd mentioned that you might do it. So
I appreciate it. I really do.
Set it up. It was about time to come in anyhow. Temperature's 105, probably going to go to 110 by 6 o'clock tonight.
Great God in heaven.
So I kind of blew off the finishing up of the new 6x6 dog kennel that I'm building to keep the little goddamn mutt out of my garden.
Roger, don't hide your light under a bushel. Tell us how you really feel.
Well, he's got a puppy. He doesn't want to leave it down at the farm when he goes to work. So he brings puppy here for mom and dad to babysit. And puppy loves to pull on drip irrigation tapes on them and dig holes next to the tomato plants and things of that sort. And everybody here kind of knows how I am about my garden. Don't fuck with it. It's my project.
Right. That's your safe space.
Yeah. So anyhow, kid and his mother got together and decided to buy this steel pole cyclone fence type 6x6 foot cage to encase the bolt it up, hold it. So anyhow, that's what I've been working on along with all the other stuff that, like you mentioned, this time of year, I'm real busy with dealing stuff. The other day, 7.5 pounds of blueberries at a U-Pick farm, and they gave veterans $1 a pound price, so we went and got a bunch of blueberries, and now we're processing them. And, you know, life just goes on, but I'm just busier than, I don't know, what. Unless I've been kind of absent without leave here a bit on my volunteer responsibilities, and it's going to continue for a while. I just can't get
it's everything that, no, done. It's that time of year. I completely understand, and I think we all do.
But I was really, really sorry to hear about Scott. I missed it last night. I must have been off doing something, only half listening. But it is sad. You know, it is sad. And what I picked up here, apparently it happened some time ago, and we just found out about it.
Right.
So.
Sometime prior to June 13th. The closest we can do is to isolate, but identify the last time he called in, and then the post was on June 13th, so it was somewhere within that time period.
He did bring a lot to the program.
Oh, he certainly did. He never brought anything but his A game, so to speak.
And a bunch of his old radio stories were enjoyable.
Yeah, I particularly love the one where he had to go out and brush the snow off the satellite dish and managed to. Probably was and was going to run down the street for a pack of smokes and managed to lock himself out of the station. Was that it? You remember that one?
Yeah, I remember that one. He stepped out for a smoke, couldn't get back in.
And I could identify with that because I'd done that sort of thing.
There's a whole lot of other people that have gathered here.
Yeah.
And there's one guest, I have no idea who that is, but it's a whole bunch of the regulars, so may as well run around the room.
Absolutely, let's do that. I'm just looking at the screen with the participants on it, and you know, usually we try to do the hand-raising thing, but somebody get us started.
Robin, Theo here. Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I hear you, Theo. You're a little faint.
Okay, sorry about the hair. I shall become voluminous at the touch of a button. Yeah, Scott's going to leave a huge gap, as you've already said. That's a big pair of shoes to fill in coming in and trying to
talk me off the ledge.
Well, yeah, there's that. But he was also by proxy doing it for a lot of the rest of us by sort of saying, hey, don't take it all so seriously. The universe is full of ridiculous things, and being able to laugh at them and laugh at yourself doing them is a healing thing. And I'm going to miss that.
I'm going to miss all the stories, Theo. I mean, I was thinking about Willard Scott earlier. You know, he got to go into the into the booth and everything and watch Willard Scott work when he was working in D.C. And it had a profound effect on him. He was young. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes a broadcaster. And as he noted, from the 1970s into like 1998, he was in broadcast. So that would have been, so 23, he said, yeah, so 48, till he was about 43 years old. And then did other things. But there was a lot of stuff in there.
Oh yeah, and having your earliest experience seeing somebody who was that much of a pro. I mean, whatever you thought of Willard Scott, he was a pro. And seeing somebody who can do this that effortlessly, it could make you question whether you're at all suited for the job. But I don't think Scott ever had that problem.
No, he knew exactly what it, and he worked jazz, he worked talk, he worked, you know, pop. He saw stations turn over from, you know, respectable, highly audienced formats to Christian caterwauling, I think.
Ow. The very thought draws forth the word ow. But
well, that was one of those places where we connected because we both had that in common, you know, having jocked our fair share of shifts of Christian caterwauling.
My heart goes out to you.
I'm scarred. I'm scarred. I only did it for a couple of years in high school, but I'm scarred. I'm triggered.
I was lucky because I learned radio basically with a more minuscule audience working at a college station, which had our broadcast footprint basically extended to both the edge of the east parking lot, all the way to the west parking lot. And otherwise, nobody much heard us. I don't think they trusted us a lot.
Spanning the block with 25 powerful watts.
That's about it. It was micro-broadcasting. I don't think the College Board of Trustees much wanted to turn us bunch of late 60s, early 70s young, you know, hotheads and malcontents loose with open microphones.
Was that hotheads or potheads? Probably both.
I refuse to speak for anybody else in the matter. It was still illegal.
yeah, answered the question anyway.
My discretion has carried me far.
Understood. I just had a note from John in Central PA. Damn, so sad. His stories were fascinating. I'm sorry for you and everyone else who enjoyed his conversations. And by the way, going back to the Obama and Taylor Toronto and the guy with the machete, that maggot got Obama's address because the king maggot truthed the address. There's your answer, Stephen New York. Ugh.
And I'm wondering if that's not legally actionable, because that a former president and violating his and his family's security.
No, there's a layer of attenuation there.
How is I supposed to know some guy with 400 rounds of ammunition, two firearms, and a machete who was living in a van down by the river would ever decide to take matters into his own hands? Certainly not what I wanted.
Yeah, right, sure.
But, I mean, that's always, Theo, the complaint, or always the claim.
I know, I've heard it before.
Glenn Beck.
We all.
Glenn Beck. All of them. Rush Limbaugh. The falafel guy. You know, Bill O'Reilly. Because when a guy marched into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation in Knoxville, Tennessee, and started blowing people away, he left a manifesto where he cited every single person who had influenced him to do what he did. And not a thing was done with them. The guy who went out to shoot up the Tides Foundation in San Francisco did so because Glenn Beck had been prattling on about progressives and progressivism and frogs in pots and shit like that. And the only thing that saved the people who work at the Tides Foundation was the fact that he had to drink a bottle of Courage before he could leave. So he got busted for DUI.
That's fortuitous. Actually, I've had a little experience, and it's kind of silly, with, you know, the downfall or the outfall from somebody's manifesto. Because as it was, I was flying the day after Ted Kaczynski's, the Unabomber manifesto hit the press, and everybody was going over it with a fine-tooth comb or actually an electron microscope, I think, trying to find some angle that nobody else had covered yet. And as it happened, I was flying to Spokane that day, passing through security at SeaTac Airport, and they had the wands literally turned up to 11, if not to 11 billion. I think they could have detected, you know, radio signals from the other planets with those wands. They were that cranked up. And because I wore a pentacle and carried at the time a medicine bag, they wanded those. They started going beep, 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 beep. And I had to explain myself, and I had to explain Wicca and paganism to some very, very unsmiling TSA people. But they were having so many people go off because of the wands that they just said, oh, let's let him go. So I got thrown back. I didn't get shunted off into some side office to wait in dubious suspense for hour after hour.
And handed a tube of SPF, oh my God, because you were off to Guantanamo, right?
Pretty much. Well, anyway, I will let you go. You've got other callers, and they are probably more articulate than I. But,
oh, you're plenty articulate. Don't sell yourself short, Theo.
Well, thank you. But I've got other things to do anyway, so you hang in, please, and take care. No, and
I'm just sad. I'm okay, but I'm just, I mean, you can't. He felt like, and it's one of the things that happens with this program, the people I talk to over time, yeah, it's never been about me. It's always been about the conversation and what other people can bring to it.
You're providing the conduit.
And so, you know, I feel like one of my co-hosts has passed.
In a large sense, he has. And we're all going to have to, you know, stretch our talents and work up the nerve to actually call in just to help fill that hole.
And you know, the fact of the matter is, and I don't want to be unpleasant, but I can't help, because I've seen it. I've seen it happen in real time in various chats, and it's even happened to me with emails. You know, oh, it's the Scott and Robin show again, or the Scott and Bob show again. Or people.
Yeah, and that's incredibly crass.
Yeah, it was. I'm not gonna go into it publicly, but I wonder how those people feel now.
Good question. Hopefully they're feeling a bit abashed, because they got it coming.
I mean, just, you know.
Let his memory be a blessing.
Hear, hear, Theo. Have a great evening, my friend. Let's
you
see.
Too, lady. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. Somebody, speak up. Got six other people in the room. Somebody's gonna decide to talk.
I'm shocked. I don't have words.
Hey, Jeremy.
I mean, I admit I clowned around with Scott, made him laugh, and made fun of him, but he made fun of me back, and
right.
Never meant any harm. But
yeah, that's not what I'm talking about.
I know, but it's still kind of shocking. You don't expect it, but well, I can't even say that, because over the last couple months he's had some health problems. It's kind of in the back of my mind. I thought this might be end all process of us, and lo and behold, here we are.
Yeah, I worried about him when he went to the hospital, but he was. And then the rehab center, but he was in such good form. I mean, he called us from there.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the woman banging her tray in the background, and I got to where I got a drumstick and a cowbell out and just whack 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 while he was talking. And well, this was after he got back home. I was like, I just wanted you to feel comfortable.
Kind of like a woman banging her, or maybe like Trump someday banging his cup on the cell door asking for a reward.
Yeah.
You dirty screws.
So, yeah, I don't know. You'll be missed. Yeah, sometimes we all say annoying things, and it annoyed certain people, but Scott had a quality to him which is genuine and very rare. He he could take a ribbing, and trust me, there's quite a few of us that ribbed him quite often about certain things that he said over the years, and get a good laugh out of it, but he'll be missed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I will never listen to that Casey Kasem clip that we loved so much without hearing his voice. Ponderous, man. Ponderous.
Yes, he used to love that clip. He would talk about it often in Back Porch.
Get Don on the phone. And we actually had a philosophical disagreement over what that next line was. Where are those pictures I was supposed to see? And he thought they were photographs, and I thought Casey Kasem was referring to the fact that he would get advanced copies of movies that were coming out to see and hopefully talk about. And I think I was right.
How am I supposed to come out of a happy song to a dead fucking dollar?
And we're living it right now. We are living it right now into a death dedication.
Exactly right.
God, well, he was funny.
I'm working.
He even found a way to make it. He found a way to be funny dying.
He did. Well, I'm working, so I'm going to make noise, but I'll back off and let someone else talk. But I'll just listen to the background.
Okay, thanks, Jeremy. Okay, somebody jump in.
Well, this is Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. Hey, the first time I heard Scott's voice was not on this show. It was when he was producing for a guy named Richard C. Hoagland. And I'm sure you remember who Richard C. was, Robin.
Yeah.
And Scott produced for him for a very short period of time. And one night Richard C. announced that Scott was no longer with the program due to personal reasons. And in a very short order, it came out that the reason Scott had left the program was because Richard C. wasn't paying him. So I just think back to that because it was such a funny thing, because Scott was good at it when he was producing. I called in and talked to him one night while I was waiting to get on the air for that show. And then one day I was listening to your show and I heard a voice and I'm like, I know that voice. And that was the start of Scott calling in. So
I'm going to piggyback off you for a second here, Kevin. It reminded me of a happy memory. I have one of Scott, too, and it has nothing to do with this show. But late one night, a few years before Art Bell died, he made his comeback to Midnight in the Desert. And I was listening for shits and giggles, and who'd you know call in? It was fucking Scott.
Yep.
And I heard him on there and asked me the next day, because it was a friend of the front porch. He said, sure shit, it was him. But there's another happy memory of him hearing somewhere else. Another show which he knew was fanciful, but he still enjoyed it.
Yep. Yep. So Scott was widely known beyond the borders of Head On. So that's my memory of him.
Thank you, Kevin. That's sweet. I mean, I knew he called into other programs. And, I mean, Washington Journal. That was not his only appearance on Washington Journal when I played at the beginning of the program.
No.
And he was a night owl. You know, when he would call into the program and it was like, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon there in San Diego, I even got emails of people bitching about his spoon striking his mug.
as he was stirring his coffee.
He was stirring his instant coffee.
Yep.
And then one member of the Horn Family Community Congregation made a point of sending him some decent coffee.
Yep.
And just, you know, little beauties. And his groceries. He called us from the grocery store one time. He was in the aisles at Kroger or, you know, Ralph's or whatever it is out there. And we got into a detailed discussion of the Private Selection house brand.
Yeah.
Because things can get nerdy here really fast. Well, I got to get on the bus, Bob.
Yep. Didn't he call one time on the bus?
I think he called from the bus once, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. And his longstanding relationship with, you know, he got so mad over, what was it? Was it HBO? Or was it AT&T? He'd been with them forever and been grandfathered and grandfathered and grandfathered, and they kept trying to raise his bill and go, nope!
Yep.
And you know, and the family stories. Aunt Effie. It was Aunt Effie, was, and but there were two aunts, and I've been just absolutely deviling my own mind trying to remember who the other aunt was, because the one aunt I remember is the one who had her 16-ounce tall boy and her cigarettes and was watching wrestling. And Scott was a little boy and just absolutely enwrapped by it. Hit him again!
Yep.
And another of the aunties made some kind of magnificent cake. I mean, the conversations were so good because the conversations were everywhere. There was not, I mean, he was truly a polymath and an autodidact, and he could follow a conversation anywhere it led. Well, Brother Deacon Asa and I had a little conversation off air last night after the program. We were talking. Yeah, he was a natural. You can't teach that stuff.
No.
I mean, I don't know, in a more just world, or one, you know, just one break goes a different way. He was a, you know, he could have been a. I hesitate to say a Howard Stern because, well, Scott wasn't particularly dirty.
But he could have been someone much more famous.
He could have. But he was happy in the life that he built for himself, by all appearances. And I think that that's the most important thing. You know, I think the best thing that any of us can ever have happen to us at the end, you know, there's that old Greek adage that says call no man happy until you know the manner of his death. Well, we don't know the manner by which Scott died, but we know that it was sudden and he was alone.
Yep.
And the fact that he, expert user of the telephone that he was, well, I don't know if he called 911. If he had called 911, he probably would have engaged them in a little conversation before he said, by the way, I think I'm having a fill in the blank. But, you know, I think of Scott could probably be put on his stone, died happy.
Yep.
And that's the most any of us can hope for. You know, Kurt Vonnegut said toward the end of his life, I think we were just put here to fart around. And I think he's right. I think another time Vonnegut said we were put here to dance with the word dance doing a lot of work for a lot of kinds of living. I'm just going to miss him.
Yep. I think we all will.
Anyone else? And by the way, if you want to get into the Skype group, and you know, because we got a few more minutes left of the program, a little over half an hour, use the button at headon.live. It'll carry you right into the group, and bang, you'll be part of the conversation. And nobody's going to get kicked out. So, jump right in. Who's the guest? I've got a guess. I surmise an answer, but who's the guest?
I can interject if nobody else will.
Oh, hey, Ken. Sure.
No, those are kind words. I'm just so glad that sitting up pregnant pause. you eulogize.
Websites menu, bring menus. Go. 12 up.
Uh-oh.
Kevin, could you mute, please? Go on, Ken.
Yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought, kind of like Scott does, and he was so good at free form or free thinking, just you know, a call and response, or just a he could free associate.
Hey, Kevin, your text to speech. Could you mute that, please?
Visit websites and find information from the internet. Entertain exit by emails. Entertainment exit by connect. Exit. There are three options. Restart. 203 shutdown. Restart. Confirm.
And
are you sure you want to exit? Yes.
Somebody's got their camera on. That's
Jerry.
Is that Jerry? Okay. Well, Ken, do some wool gathering and pull it back together, and we'll come back.
Okay, I'll be listening.
Okay, I'm glad you're here. Whoever wants to go. And someone is on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Sorry to have to call in on such a sad day.
That's okay.
I'm going to miss Scott, too. I'm sorry I hadn't called in years, but I've been listening.
I know.
I've been listening almost every day.
And you know what?
I didn't listen yesterday.
This is Ken, right?
He definitely was a light. He always brought a smile and a laugh to me. My neighbors could hear me laughing in the yard. What is he laughing about? Probably something Scott was telling Robin, and just they were having such a good time about it.
Aloha, Ken. The other Ken.
How's it going?
It's hard, but I'm glad you're
here.
It's
been a long time since I've been able to call.
But you know what? I want you to know, you've never been far from the thoughts of the community. I think it's important that people know that.
Yeah, I've been listening probably since almost the year you started, and I don't miss a show. I try not to.
It's a beautiful thing.
I didn't think you would have a show on July 4th, so I didn't tune in yesterday.
Well, I missed July 3rd, and I felt like I had to be here, and then it turns out there was a reason.
Well,
how are things on
like
the...
Like I said, the one thing we can be happy is he was so uplifting. He was always uplifting.
Absolutely. How are things on the Big Island?
Beautiful. I gotta say, it's beautiful. You know, I've been getting into new stuff the last couple of years, been getting into anthuriums and just trying to do something different. But
is it working out?
I'm slowly moving into it. You know, I'm still doing drone work. I do drone photography for my wife and other real estate agents and just freelance. But you know, I have a license, so I can make money with it. And I've been doing that for about 5 or so years now. Yeah, that last eruption made me get my license so I could actually film stuff like that and do something with it.
That was a thing.
Yeah. I've got some crazy footage from it. I need to post it on YouTube or do something with it. I had never even posted it, you know.
God, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, we had a 3-mile no fly zone around it, so I had to fly from 3 miles away, but still, I got some really excellent photography. Got some shots where you can see the whole river. The river was probably 3 or more miles long, and I could get the whole river in one shot. Yeah, that's
that must
a long
have been,
time ago now.
That must have been wild to see it as a recording, or wild even to see it in real time. How long does it take? I'm just curious. How long does it take for the landscape to recover from something like that?
Well, I'll just put it this way. It took them almost a year before the lava was even cool enough for them to pave a road over it. So it shows how much temperature is even inside that lava for over a year or more later. It doesn't come back. I mean, the place that got overrun with lava, it was a little, nice little protected bay that actually had corals and reef, and it was beautiful, and it's gone. Just gone. And it's not coming back. You know, there is no coming back. You know, it killed so many fish and turtles and everything when it happened. It was just, you know, a river of dead fish and stuff for a little bit. It was crazy. And then it was like silica from the lava going into the water. So even if they didn't get killed from the temperature, the whole area was like, it changed pH. It changed, water chemistry. You know, it was, you could see the water had a pale milky turquoise look instead of the beautiful blue green. And it was just, and it just trailed all the way down that whole coast. I would rather not talk about anything else bad right now.
It's
so heavy.
I understand.
That's part of what I wanted to say. It's just how, you know, the way I definitely remember Scott is he was always so uplifting, and the stories. And I was there that day he told the story about getting locked out of the radio station. And yeah, it's just, you know, I work during these hours, so I hardly ever get to really take a break during this time. But I was just like, I had to make time.
I'm so glad you did.
But yeah, and just everything that's going on in the mainland, man, I don't miss the mainland that much, I tell you. You know, at least out here, nobody's running around with AKs and AR-15s and shooting up everybody. Not yet, anyway. You know, there's still a little Aloha out here. But people buying guns like they're stupid, you know, everywhere.
Well, I mean, but still, you're in a little better shape than... You're a little better shape than the rest of the country in many ways.
Yeah.
But like I said, I am so very glad you called in. And look, I know what the circumstances are.
In.
I hope you'll check in when the topic is a little less heartbreaking.
Yes, definitely. You know, I've got a lot of good news. You know, I've had a pretty decent couple of years, not money wise, just health wise and getting better and stuff. You know, I had so many years I had bad health. You know, that, you know, it was physical ailment, but that wears on you mentally as well. So it was a really hard few years, but I'm finally kind of over that. And it was just getting the right therapy, getting the right physical therapist means so much difference than going to chiropractor every week and having nothing else done to it. You know, it's just that doesn't touch the problem. It just, you know, it's like treating the symptoms only. You know how insurance is. They're like, oh, let's try this for several years until we're tired of paying for it. Or you know, they're just, oh, I hate insurance.
With good reason. That's one of those hatreds it's okay to have.
Yeah.
We don't pay.
But you do, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I just wanted to say aloha. I don't want to hold up anybody. that way everybody can get a moment to speak.
I'm so glad you did, Ken, and aloha indeed. And what's the other one? Mahalo?
Mahalo. And, if you don't mind, I've got a way you can actually find me on YouTube. I finally made a channel. I've only got two little tiny videos, but, you know, I'm doing it for my plants. And,
Oh, well, by all means.
Give us the
address of the channel.
It's Ken Poltes Plants. KENPOLTES. All one word, Ken Poltes Plants. And that's it.
Well, let me.
And I start doing my anthuriums. I'm going to start putting videos of my anthuriums and stuff on there.
Well, you're about to have one new subscriber.
I didn't realize how easy it was to breed anthuriums. And so I got into the breeding of anthuriums, and I'm really liking it.
Let's see here. Oh, you're not popping right up, but... KENPOLTES.
I think so.
Well, double check and shoot me. Double check and shoot me a note.
Yeah.
And then I'll announce it.
I think I can do that. Yes. Okay. Then you can see a long-haired freak doing plants.
sounds like a good time to me, Ken.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just want to tell everybody at the Horn, thank you for, you know, being, you know, like a supportive family, really. You're like a family that, you know, really, everybody there. I wish I could get to one of the Horn Ends, really, but I can't even hardly get to the mainland to see my family.
Oh, goodness me, I understand.
I've only been twice in 20-something years.
Wow. But you're safe.
I'm hoping
you're safe and you're
happy. A little money and can get back and forth a little.
Here, here. Well, let us know. Let us know if you're going to be here. Somebody,
okay.
Because there's a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation almost somewhere, and we all do like to meet each other.
Yes. And I know we got quite a few plant lovers in the Horn, and good gardeners. You know, I love listening to Roger about his stuff, and I just, you know, it's always nice, you know. Well, I'll let everybody go, and I appreciate you, Robin, being as somebody said, a conduit. If nothing else, a conduit to help us all.
Thank you, Ken, and be well.
You too.
All right.
Have a good one, Robin.
All right. Take care.
Aloha.
Aloha. Haven't heard from Ken in a while. It's great to hear from him. I'm glad to know he's okay, because I do, and I know other people do. You know, we hear from somebody, and then we don't hear from them for a while, and y'all okay? There's another member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, and he didn't have a social media presence that I was aware of, and that's Ron in Raleigh. I haven't heard from him in ages, and I never know it's because, you know, I finally said the wrong thing and pissed somebody off or something. I don't know. And I'm sure that the Pineapple Prince, Rush Limbaugh, never actually sat around worrying about the people that he cut off and said, well, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. I'm sure he didn't, because he had other millions of dollars to worry about. But I do. This place is first and foremost a community. It is a family. And so if you're listening and you haven't checked in a while, would you please? Because I do. I sit around thinking. I've heard from people this evening. I haven't heard from in ages. So, you know, thank you, Scott, for that. Because it matters. It well and truly matters. Will, is that you?
Trying trying to unmute.
Okay. I heard you say trying to unmute, so you did for
a minute. Can't unmute.
Yeah. Well, no, I heard you. I heard you.
So can you hear me now?
I do hear you, and you don't have to. You don't have to have your camera on.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I'll turn it off. So it's a sad day.
Well, you had it.
I might go for the. Yeah, now this should be it.
Now you're there. Yes, yes, yes.
So yesterday I was busy doing things around my apartment in L.A., and I tuned in today to hear about Scott's passing. He was a rare person of many gifts, perhaps the greatest of which was his spirit, full of hope, full of joy, full of zest in life. This is something that we can take from it. Perhaps the best memorial to people is that you continue their work and try to take their best qualities for yourself. This is something that I think Scott would want us to do, to remember we are a community, that despite the insanity of our world at times, that we can still laugh and we can still hope and we can still stand with each other.
I hope so, indeed.
So let's keep Scott's memory alive. I'll remember the many stories. I'll remember his bird making noise and his radio stories, because just being tangentially involved on the edge of radio, I know things can go wrong, everything from locking yourself out to barking dogs if you're transmitting at home. So it's a loss, but we can keep Scott's memory alive. And there's an old Jewish tradition that so long as one person speaks your name in this world and remembers you, in a sense, you are still here. So I think Scott will be with us for a very long time indeed.
I think he's built up some credit just in the, well, in the entire time that he was talking with this community, Will. He built up a lot of credit, so to speak. And in the last couple of days, people have been speaking his name a lot. And you know, as I've said before, I didn't know it was part of Jewish tradition, but I long ago reached the idea that memory is eternity.
In a sense, it is a eternity, because think about it. That thousands of years after the Iliad was written, people still feel for the characters. Thousands of years later, we still identify with some events and people of the past. We hearken back to great people, Frederick Douglass, Ben Franklin, and many, many others. So if we keep their memories alive and try to do what we can to build a better world, we honor those who are no longer here to play their part. But they are here in a sense of providing us inspiration, wisdom, and comfort. There will come a time soon, Robin, when something happens and you know exactly what Scott would have said. And in a sense, for that moment, he's back with us.
Yes, yes. I knew you would have wisdom, Will.
No, I try, and I won't stay long because I'd like people who haven't called in for a while, perhaps a few years or so, or even a few months, please call in. We got to keep this community going.
I agree.
Hang in there, Robin. Remember that while loss is part of life, so is love and hope and laughter. And Scott would probably be the first one reminding us of that if he was somehow on the line with us.
I agree.
Hang in there, Robin, and everyone, let's remember, we're not alone. We have each other. We have people around us. Don't let the worst things in this world get you down, because you don't have to fight alone. You don't have to stand alone. You have community. You have family. Reach out and remember that. With that, I'll bid you shalom, which means peace, wholeness, and is used for hello and goodbye, much like aloha. And I think we are more whole because Scott was part of our lives. Final reflection. Be well.
Thank you, Will. Thank you. Who wants to go next? And by the way, the stress line is open. If you can't do the Skype thing, you're welcome to jump in via the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-843-4676, 844-THEHORN, T-H-E-H-O-R-N. And it's there for you, too. That's how Ken came in from the Big Island. So, next. I heard you connecting.
Hello?
Yeah.
How y'all doing? This is Scary.
Hey, Jerry, what's up, man?
I'm supposed to be working, but we're all commemorating Scott, so I have to just listen in and remember. And Scott taught me, no matter what, always be funny. He always had, and we should call it the stressed and screwed line. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so. Although the screwed part of it, I don't know. Maybe it's the Hunter Biden line. Hunter Biden.
Stressed and I don't know. What can be said that hasn't been said? Scott wasn't a caller. He was a character. I tried to explain this, that there's this girl at the store I always hit on, and I didn't hit on her today. She goes, you didn't hit on me. What's wrong? She goes, oh, my podcast, we're missing a character. It's kind of sad. She got it. She's a gentle soul. But, yeah, Scott was a character. He was one of the Motley Crue, the people who call it.
Yeah, like I said, he was a natural. He was a natural, too. He had whatever it is, he had it.
Goddamn funny. I don't have much to add. Sorry, Jerry, but he just was goddamn funny, and it made me laugh. And we talk about grim subjects on this program, Robin. And God, he can make us laugh, and it's the magic. It was Scott, and he can never be replaced. And go ahead, Jerry.
Not laugh. Belly laugh. I've dropped the phone and just broken up so many times because of some shit, Scott.
All kidding aside. Actually, no. All kidding in up front. I'm pretty good at maintaining my composure. It's a skill one develops. But he could break me. And I feel like some of my happiest moments behind this microphone. I mean, the first thing that comes immediately to mind is the monkey and the math problem. It ruined me. The belly laughs went on and on. I don't even know what date that was, but just me losing my shit for it. And on the one hand, inside my head, it's like, oh, this is some great broadcasting, Robin. On the other hand, it was, this is some great broadcasting, Robin.
He would do it once a week where he would just say something and you just have to laugh for like 5 minutes, and then you think about it and you have to laugh again. And it wasn't on purpose. He would just right off the cuff. He had been cut right off the cuff. And it would be funny as shit and profound.
I don't know if he knew where my funny bone was, and as a result, you know, every now and then it would just, eh. Or I honestly don't know. But
it was yours, honey.
It would be a throwaway line. It would be just a joke grenade. You'd be like, "Geez, that was funny." And it would take like 3 seconds, and you'd be like, "God, that one." Gotta believe in heaven, because I know Scott's there. I think the heavenly host just want him close so they can hear what he has to say. He was a gentle, loving spirit.
Yeah, if we want to work within the Christian oeuvre, we can see Junior up there going, "Dad, shit's really bad down there. It's getting pretty grim up here too. Get Scott up here. I need a laugh." Scott at the pearly gates going, "You have got to be fucking kidding me. This is real." And St. Peter doubles up laughing and goes, "Told you that's what he'd say." And Junior reaching into his robe and going, all right, here you go. You win.
I can see it. Yeah, I lit a candle and I put it in the chat there.
I saw that. That was sweet.
I said I'd never do a Zoomish thing, but this is Skype, and I'm proud to know you people, and I'm proud to commemorate Scott.
He deserved this evening. He deserved this show. And he deserves every bit of all the love that we have to share. Just as a matter of laying down a marker for the difference that he made.
It was good to be here. As everybody kind of stuck their head in the door, and I wasn't, and I was like, "How can I? No, I know I have to be here." And whoever hears this, in the podcast, call it commemorate. It's important for your soul. It felt good. It hit the soul. It really did tonight. And it's so far.
I mean, a couple of weeks or more in the past that it's like it's a little too late for flowers. Oh, my God, Georgian coarse gold. Yes, hold on. Because, Scott and I fell apart on that line, y'all. The Mary Tyler Moore episode. The death of Chuckles the Clown. George just reminded me. A little song, a little dance, a little seltzer down your pants. Yes! Yes, George, yes! God, we waxed insane.
That was the last show. The Mary Tyler Moore.
It was just one of the greatest ones.
No, but his last show that I remember, he was talking about Mary Tyler Moore.
I need somebody to figure out what his last call was. I mean, I think I need to figure that out.
It was like kind of a sports show or something?
No, The porch may have been the last time, but I mean the last one-on-one conversation. Because it had been a while since he had called, and he referenced not feeling well. And then we were off and running. And those programs when he called and said, I'm not feeling my best, and then by the end he was like, I am feeling much better. I felt like we'd all accomplished something by lifting Scott up a little bit. I don't know, maybe he was a bodhisattva. I don't know. But the love and compassion he had for his cats and his bird. It was precious. It was precious. Has anybody not spoken who wanted to? Because I want to make sure that everybody who gets to does so. And thanks so much for the emails, remembering Scott. Thank you, Jude, for all of your compassion. It's going to be a while getting over this. Just am. Took me a while to get over Mr. Stress. It took me a while to get over Maura. And I still wonder and worry about the people I don't hear from. But I'm glad I heard from y'all. I'm so glad. I guess tomorrow, Thorn in the Side Thursday, we will get back. We will put on our hip waders and get fully back into the slime and the sleaze and the swamp. But today was for Scott. This was for Scott. Thank you for every word of kindness that you have said in his memory. You've done well not only by him, but by yourself and by this community. Thank you. And thanks to all of our PayPal and Patreon contributors. Subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one. You know, I wonder how many people get to this part of the program and go click. Because it's pretty much always the same every night. But it is important within my spirit that y'all know the depth of the gratitude and the warmth and the love that I feel for anyone who, in whatever manner you so choose, participates in this little long-running experiment in goodwill conversation. Your precious, finite time, and you share it here. And that's everything. Everything. So again, thank you. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Roger for starting the group this evening. Thank you, Steve, for finding the clip and sending it to me. It means so much. Thank you to our news ninjas, and thank you to everybody who responded to the post last night. And I don't think I've ever seen as many comments on a posting of the Podbean link as this one did. But it's weird how, and this is just another thing, it's weird how Facebook works, the algorithms, I don't know. But I can post one thing and 300 people will respond to it. But I honest to God think that Facebook de-emphasizes when I post the link to the program. So if you want to see the link to the program, it's not just enough that we're friends. You kind of got to follow. I mean, you don't have to. But if you want to see things like, you know, the announcement yesterday, you kind of got to follow. And that applies to the podcast, too. Pretty please. Following, like, subscribe, heart, whatever. Leave a comment. It really does make a difference. Thank you, Brother Deacon. Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Stay safe, y'all. Please, attend to your health care needs. For God's sakes, if you're around maggots, wear your mask. You're big, crowded places. This is not over. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. And if some great pendulous steroid-abusing asshole comes burbling toward you on the sidewalk talking about how Hunter Biden had a red backpack that was full of crack cocaine and crack pipes and they found it, and it, well, avoid that purveyor of chocolate chicken bone paleo beverage probably laced with crack. Like the plague, because he is. Scott, this one was all for you, just like it's all for Gina. Later.